Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio sitting in for John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, May 23, 2023. Fighting has been reported today in Khartoum despite a short-term ceasefire that entered into force last evening.
The situation in Omdurman, despite the beginning of the ceasefire, is still people are complaining about the security situation is not quite good. There is no much improvement.
And residents in the South Sudanese capital, Juba, complain about frequent power cuts that have affected businesses and residents.
Businesses are going down, looking now for alternative. That also going to be another cost because some of the businesses, they have already forgotten that now they have reliable, efficient electricity, and they are paying more money.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Fighting reportedly continued in parts of Sudan's capital, Khartoum, on Tuesday, despite a seven-day U.S. brokered ceasefire that went into effect on Monday evening. Tariq Abdullah is the Sudan representative for the American humanitarian organization Invisible Children. He spoke with me from Khartoum about the ongoing fighting and the dire humanitarian situation resulting from the weeks-long conflict.
The situation in Omdurman, despite the beginning of the ceasefire, is still people are complaining about the security situation is not quite good. There is no much improvement in Khartoum state in generally, and in Omdurman and Khartoum North and south of Khartoum state as well. So we hope that these violations that we are witnessing to this ceasefire agreement will be monitored and stopped during the upcoming days, because this ceasefire truce is very important for civilians in order to access their basic needs like food, water, and medical services. And some of them are trapped in a very dangerous areas and they need to be evacuated. And without a complete and respected ceasefire, this is not going to happen.
Yes.
My case, for example, even I can even cite myself as an example. I'm somewhere safe in Khartoum, but my family travel documents are not in a safe place. And without these safe passages, I can't go and collect these documents in order to evacuate my family out of the country. And we are still waiting for that.
So basically, you could still hear gunshots today. Fighting is still going on around you.
Yes, fighting is still happening somewhere in the center of Khartoum and also south of Khartoum and also in Omdurman.
Let's talk about the humanitarian situation resulting from this fighting. The United Nations has reported that more than 1 million people have been displaced already inside Khartoum, inside Sudan, but also into neighboring countries. Food and water, power, these services, like you mentioned, are interrupted. So how do you see the humanitarian situation from where you are and from your work's perspective as well as a humanitarian based in Khartoum?
So I think the UN report is from the first days of the fighting. We are talking about around 1 million people. But right now, if we are talking about 14 million people living in Khartoum before this fighting erupted, I think now less than one third of this number remained in Khartoum because they can't afford the travel cost to go somewhere safe, and they are trapped between the two fighting groups. The humanitarian situation is very dire. Access to basic services like food, like water, like medical services is very difficult, and especially those who are suffering from chronic diseases. Many, many of them died during the past few days, some of which are even relatives and cousins of myself, because they couldn't access any medical facilities that works at the moment. Most of the clinics and hospitals either being occupied or bombed or out of services because they have no the supplies and the basic needs that will allow them to operate and support the people who remain in Khartoum. And without proper like interventions, Khartoum will run out of all the essential things like the food and medicines. At least some of the areas still have some water and electricity services, but that is less than 10% of Khartoum state. Khartoum North, where I live, there is no water or electricity for the past 38 days. So people just have to buy water and from somewhere nearby. And this is when there is like a chance to do that. When the two go stop the fight, then people go out and get some water and buy some food from the neighboring shops. But most of them are now like because of lack of security, and some of the poor people are going out and looting the shops as well as the fighting groups as well, because they need money and they need food, and this is the only way now to survive by just stealing or looting or killing. So this is how it looks now in Khartoum.
That's Tariq Abdullah, Sudan representative for Invisible Children. He spoke with me from Khartoum. Sudan's short-term ceasefire, which was brokered by the United States and signed in the Saudi city of Jeddah, provides for a monitoring and coordination mechanism to track violations of the truce. For more on the terms of the ceasefire agreement and what to expect in the coming days, I reach Samah Salman, Sudanese strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association.
In Section 4, Clause 7 of the ceasefire agreement, the Monitoring and Coordination Committee can actually define the appropriate measures to call for accountability of the perpetrators of violations, especially any grave crimes or abuses. In the U.S., Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing last week, U.S. Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland indicated that the U.S. State Department had a targeted sanctions package ready to impose on the spoilers of a ceasefire agreement. So there are punitive measures against the violators. She also indicated publicly on the record that the allies, specifically the Saudi Arabians and the Emiratis, would be on board with the punitive measures and the sanctions framework itself.
Yes, but the agreement itself, the ceasefire agreement, does not name certain punitive measures to be taken against violators. Is that correct?
Well, what the ceasefire does allow for, and this is specifically called for in Section 4, Clause 7, of the agreement on a short-term ceasefire and humanitarian arrangements, which was signed on May 20th, it allows for a clause that where the Monitoring and Coordination Committee can define the appropriate measures to call for the accountability of the perpetrators. So it allows for those measures to be specified, but it doesn't specify in the actual document what those measures are.
Yes, and if we just step back a little bit, it's a short-term ceasefire that the parties agreed to on Saturday, which went into force Monday evening. Today is the first full day of the ceasefire. But then we have to remember it's not a peace agreement or even a show of willingness to stop the fighting. What does it mean for how we should understand this conflict?
Well, Nabil, this is a complicated and very complex conflict that is the result of the buildup of possibly 20 or 30 years of residual effects of the war crimes and atrocities committed throughout the regime of Omar al-Bashir in the last 2 years or so by Generals Burhan al-Hemeti. So there's a saying that if you want to eat an elephant, you have to slice it first. I mean, the short-term humanitarian ceasefire is the first step of three steps, and it's a critical one. So the first step is this humanitarian ceasefire to open safe corridors for food, medicine, to humanitarian workers to reach the 47 million Sudanese who are currently trapped in their homes without electricity or water. The second step is a sustained cessation of hostilities or a peace agreement, the same peace agreement that you're speaking about. And then the third step is a process to return us to a transition to democracy. So it's a three-pronged approach, if you will. And the second step, which is the peace agreement, if the ceasefire holds, requires more pressure from a broad international coalition of countries. We saw U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Molly Fee's visit to Addis Ababa on May 12th for meetings with the African Union, the IGAD, the UN Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, and other African partners in order to bring them on board this coalition. So, I mean, I believe that the U.S. And Saudi Arabia, the UN, AU, and regional bodies are clear on how their national security interests and that of the international community are threatened by a potential failed state in Sudan. The dangerous implications of a spillover of the Sudan war into neighboring countries. And so it's in the interest of the international community and our neighbors to press for a peace agreement.
That's Samah Salman, Sudanese strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association. She spoke with me from the U.S. state of Virginia earlier today. Some South Sudanese analysts say if the government wants to improve its image internationally, it should first improve conditions for its citizens. A lecturer of anthropology at the U.S. University of Syracuse says South Sudan should improve its economy and ensure free political space in the country. For VOA News, Majang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Yesterday, South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dauding said his ministry has come up with a 10-point plan to promote its foreign policy and clean up its once-tarnished image internationally, telling this program that South Sudan is not the same country it was when fighting broke out in 2013 and again in 2016, and therefore should be treated differently. Jok Madurjok, a lecturer of anthropology at the United States Rutgers University, said it is futile to try and repair its image abroad when there is not much progress at home, like providing basic necessities to its citizens and ensuring political space to people who may not agree with you.
What you do in order to for your image to improve is to do the basic things within the country, introduce major reforms, in terms of the economy and improving living standards of the people, in terms of widening the political space so citizens can organize and speak and criticize the process of governance. You have to provide security. You have to ensure that citizens are not dying of violence as they are today in South Sudan.
Madud says if the government is serious about improving its image, it should fight corruption in Hennes, use its oil proceeds to invest in the welfare of its people, and provide transparency of public office holders.
If you do these things, then you can take those and then sell them to your countries that are friendly to you, countries that are critical of you, such as the US, UK, East African countries that are neighboring to South Sudan. You will not even need to go out and campaign. Your actions and the improvements in the country will become visible to everyone. So I think a campaign to improve the image of the country as a mission, as a policy, in my view, is nothing but an exercise in futility.
The UN, the US, and the European Union have all slapped several sanctions and a travel ban on South Sudanese individuals accused of blocking the peace process after hundreds of thousands of civilians were killed in the country's civil war. The UN also imposed an arms embargo on South Sudan. last week, the chargé d'affaires in South Sudan's embassy in Washington, D.C., protested against a statement made last week by Nikki Haley, the U.S. GOP presidential candidate and former South Carolina governor and United Nations ambassador. Haley said on Fox News that, quote, "If we can't hold the FBI accountable for the Russian hawks, we are no different from South Sudan or the Democratic Republic of Congo. This type of corruption should never happen in America," end quote. Philip Aguirre, a lecturer of security and strategic studies at the University of Juba, says nothing less than full implementation of the 2018 peace deal is what the government must do to win international recognition.
Foreign policy is a reflection of the domestic. So the bigger issue at the domestic level is the implementation of a revitalized peace agreement, which the His Excellency the President is committed. And the parties that are in the government should be seen working towards one objective, one goal. If that is observed, then that will work in the improvement of the image.
In August last year, signatories to the peace deal agreed to extend the transitional period by another 2 years, saying the additional time will allow politicians to implement remaining elements of the agreement. Foreign Minister Deng said yesterday the implementation of the agreement has improved with the graduation of the necessary unified forces, the removal of child soldiers from the army, and the launch of programs to ensure transitional justice. Hundreds of South Sudanese forces abandoned training centers across the country due to lack of food and other supplies. Experts estimate that there were between 7,000 and 19,000 child soldiers in South Sudan as of February 2021, according to a report by World Vision. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a convoy belonging to the United Nations peacekeeping mission in Abyei or UNISFA was attacked and looted. Stay tuned.
What do you think? Speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your family take care of an elderly relative?
Once in a while, we sit down with him, speak with him, ask him how he's doing so he doesn't feel lonely. Then we also tell him about what is going on in the world so that he doesn't feel left out.
We make sure we provide the basic needs like food, water. Make her happy, not to feel rejected. Because when they are growing and you start to abandon them, they see that they are not needed. And showing them love even brings them healing.
Helping them with the domestic chores, for example, preparing meals for them. Helping them with the clothes, cleaning up the house.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei or UNISFA condemned this week's looting of a convoy of the mission's trucks. UNISFA says four of its civilian contracted trucks carrying seven sea containers were hijacked south of Abyei town. Deng Gaideng has the details for VOA Fombor.
UNISPA spokesman Daniel Adekera says the mission's convoy was looted by armed young men in the area. Adekera says the trucks were transporting UNISPA sea containers through South Sudan, including one carrying some personal effects of the Ghanaian battalion when they were hijacked and looted near Baton, 21 kilometers south of Abyei town.
Due to the ongoing security situation in Sudan, UNISPA leadership arranged to conduct the rotation of his troops were Entebbe, Wau Abie, rather than Entebbe, Kadugu Abie. Consequently, the personal effects of Gambad were processed to be transported by road to Wau to Entebbe. However, the convoy was stopped by Abie youth, who inspected the items and demanded additional paperwork, despite being presented with all required documentations. The youth denied passage to the trucks and proceeded to divide the convoy to a different location where the personal effects of the Gambad contingents were offloaded and looted.
Adekera says the UN peacekeeping mission had contacted South Sudan national monitors for convoy road clearance for the four trucks. He says the UN is investigating the incident and efforts are underway to possibly find and retrieve the looted items.
Municipal leadership strongly condemns this brigandage by the Abie youth and calls on them to use their energies to partner with the mission to ensure that Abie is free of all forms of criminality. Unified Interest is full commitment to its mandated task of ensuring that the Abie box is free of arms and reaffirms its capability to protect all law-abiding members of the community and appeals for support and cooperation.
Ajak Deng Mien, the Abia Special Administrative Area Information Minister, also condemned the attack, which he calls an isolated incident.
That is three or four people, or maybe 10, who are in the age of youth, who have decided to do such activities. Then you come out, these are the youth who are doing this, they are told. And some are defending themselves from that kind of thing.
Mien is calling on UNISPA to remain calm and continue with its activities as authorities search for the suspects in hopes of recovering the looted items. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
The Central Equatoria State Chamber of Commerce, business owners and many Juba residents say frequent power cuts in recent weeks are causing major disruptions for business and suffering among citizens. Power in the South Sudanese capital is provided by Juba Electricity Distribution Company, or JETCO, under a public-private partnership arrangement. The head of the State Chamber of Commerce is calling on the government to immediately fix the problem. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Robert Pitia, chairperson of the Central Equatoria State Chamber of Commerce, says frequent blackouts interrupt business and halt operations at life-saving places like hospitals and clinics.
Businesses are going down, looking now for alternative. That also going to be another cost because some of the businesses, they have already forgotten that now they have reliable, efficient electricity. And they are paying him, moreover, they are paying more money.
Pitia says there is no reason why power supply should be irregular after residents and business owners have spent a lot of money in purchasing accessories such as cables, poles, among other items from JETCO, which are required for installation of power in their business premises and residential areas.
Where are we going? We need people to answer these questions. People who are responsible, JETCO, Ezra Group, officials who signed this contract to answer for us. So because people are suffering, people need answers, people need solutions.
Deng Zakaria is managing director of Print and Design, a company involved in printing and designing services in Juba. He uses power 24 hours a day to run his business. He says over the past 6 months, he has not been able to rely on JETCO power, making it difficult to sustain his business to meet the expectations of his clients. Zakaria says sometimes power blackouts occur during printing or the designing of documents, causing his company losses, not to mention the fact that his electricity bill is high.
Sometimes if my generator broke down, so I just go as a back time because I don't have another option. But totally, mostly I'm depending on my generator power. As you see, I have a screen here. This now, sometimes the screen doesn't work in evening time. Suppose the screen to be working in evening time, 24 hours, like to be the modern city. This is what the plan, this is what I'm trying to do. But I cannot make it happen because the power is very, very, very expensive.
Businessman Isaac Banamisa, who runs a salon business in the Libya market in Juba's Munuki residential area, says he started his business 4 months ago, but he says during the past 2 months, his business has suffered several setbacks due to the frequent power outages.
It is so frustrating because, for example, I started in 22nd January this year, and that whole month, let me say from January to February, things were really so difficult because every day power could go off every day from morning till evening. So sometime from evening till the other morning, so business was really down and it really made life difficult. Even right now, unexpectedly power goes off when I have customers. I don't have any source of power to back up with the JETCO. So
on top of that, Banamisa says he pays more than 100,000 South Sudanese pounds, or about $105 US, for JETCO supplied power. Joseph Thomas, the public relations manager at JETCO, says one of the company's generators broke down recently, which caused a power outage. He explains work to fix the broken generator is ongoing and could take up to 4 weeks to complete. He says the increase on the prices of buying the kilowatts is caused due to the depreciation of the South Sudanese pounds in recent.
Multiply the yesterday selling rate, which is 952 times 40.49 times 0.316. It will reach 300 something per kilowatt. So my tariff or the tariff given to JETCO is still the same, but the exchange rate is not the same. So here, JETCO is not the one who raised up the price of the kilowatt. The tariff is still the same. It's just the exchange rate fluctuation.
Thomas says JETCO is working on alternatives to avoid future breakdowns of generators and frequent power blackouts. However, Pitia stresses that the power blackouts is causing a lot of inconveniences in the capital, and that is impacting on people's cost of living. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Handkerchief by Nana Ya featuring Samini.
Da baby, na mi da baby, oh be a by you. Mrs. Aubrey, but do a honka, me dan in passu. Me try shemmy ho, shemmy ho, shemmy ho. Ah, come on, Jay, come on, Jay. Mr. Wuna Wuda, da won't Jay, won't be monka, who be there. Come on, come on, baby. Into your knee, hoy, around me, chinny, see you. Into your money, me handkerchief. Now, me sue me, dear paper. Oh, the money, me handkerchief. Money, me handkerchief. Now, me sue me, dear paper. Give me your money, me. Sue me, dear paper. In love, yeah. I'm looking for you. Watch your way. Oh, the money, me handkerchief. Sue me, dear paper. Money, me handkerchief. Sue me, dear paper.
We've been listening to Nana Ya featuring Samini and the song Handkerchief. I'm your host, Nabil Biagio, live from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Kayla Williams, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ninja Gachalero.